Time for another check-in with Quincy City Council President Nina Liang about the first council meeting of the month of March, Nina.
Yes, I can't believe we're sort of coming full circle with all the pandemic stuff, but here we are.
Here we are, approaching 1 year of pandemic life, if you will, and looking forward to post-pandemic life. And the council's still meeting on Zoom, right?
We are,
Yeah. Is that for the foreseeable future, do you think? Or is there any chat about making it semi-in-person?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly trying to figure out the best way and best time to move back in person. You know, I've said it here before as well. It's ultimately, you know, what's the safest option for folks, for all of us to meet, for the council office, the representatives from the mayor's office, everyone who comes to present during a meeting, the public, you know, for them to come and participate. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and we want to make sure that we're doing it the safest way possible. As of right now, you know, that's through Zoom. So it'd be nice to be back in the chambers and see everyone in person again. But just right now, not everyone's vaccinated yet. You know, we still need to be mindful about keeping socially distanced and staying under those guidelines.
Sure. I mean, we should point out, too, that all the municipal meetings are being held remotely. License board, zoning board, planning board, they're all remote right now. So you're not alone. I think school committee has had a few in person, but I think that's about it. So how did it go last night?
It was good. It was a very, very, very informative meeting. I know if folks are tuning in today to QATV to watch it from last night, you know, it's a very, very long meeting, so they should buckle in for it. But there was a lot of really good information that was shared last night. So I enjoyed those kinds of meetings for sure.
You're still doing the COVID-19 heroes to start your meetings?
We are. And Councillor DeBona brought in this month, or to kick off this month, COVID-19 heroes with George Burchard and George Nicholson. And we also had Christine in there as well, who does the Wreaths Across America. So, you know, it was really, I think, you know, people don't know the extent that Veteran Services provide services here in the city, just year round, you know, and so to be able to have them come in and talk about some of the work that they do, again, year round, and then to add on top of that, that they're still doing this work to serve all of our veterans during the pandemic, I think was really important for us to highlight. So it's always remarkable to be able to have an opportunity to thank them for what they do, but particularly to recognize them as a COVID-19 hero, I know is deeply important to, you know, Councillor DeBona, as well as all of us, to have an opportunity to thank them.
That's great. That's great. The Veteran Services is a critical lifeline for veterans to access, you know, all the services and programs that they're entitled to. And there's, as you know, a large number of veterans in Quincy. So they are just serving a vital role for sure.
Absolutely. And they're also now responsible for fielding calls about and inquiries about vaccines, you know, for veterans, and they are able to get them. And so, you know, that's something on top of calls that they get anyways. This is something that I had mentioned last night to them. It's something that I learned from Mr. Nicholson, that, you know, just in hearing about some of the stories that, you know, they get these kinds of calls and they get these kinds of inquiries from veterans and their families and their loved ones. And it's a one-stop shop, you know, for a lot of questions that aren't necessarily under the purview or scope of Veteran Services, but they take those calls and they take that work and they do everything they can in that department to try to find answers and to find the right connections and services to help these families. And so really they've always gone above and beyond, but to add on top of that, how do we have a continuity of these really vital services for our veterans is something that I think they've done well. And they really do set the standard, I think, for other cities and towns to look and see how can we better support our veterans. It's take a look and see what Quincy Veterans Services is doing and model that, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. So it was nice to be able to honor them, I'm sure. What did it look like at the full council meeting? What were some of the highlights, would you say?
Yeah, so we started off with a public hearing for an ordinance committee for an order that Council Pemucci had brought forward to define, to tighten up some definitions for affordable housing. I mean, this is something that, you know, he has been, Councilor Pemucci has been beating the drum about improving and continuing to better the models with affordable housing that we do here in the city well before I ever joined the council. And this is something that he's done in the last, you know, 5-6 years I've been on as well. And so this is par for the course, right, where he wants to make sure that we're continuing to have these conversations about, you know, what are the current guidelines and regulations for which we, you know, provide affordable housing here in this city, as well as provide support for those who are in affordable housing in the city. And so it was a really, again, extensive presentation from the planning board, really informative as well about how we use the funds that are provided by developers in the Affordable Housing Trust to not only sustain and maintain the current units, but also to make sure that there's additional units that come online. You know, we did talk a little bit last night about the state guidelines about meeting the affordable housing, you know, percentage or numbers that we need within the city. And there's, you know, three different guidelines for that. One is making sure that it's a certain percentage of the land that we have, that the livable land. Obviously it doesn't, you know, you don't count water, right, as a place for this, but like as far as the livable land, it's a certain percentage of that that is developed. And then we also look at the, the housing that's developed on the entire housing that we have, the entire housing stock, 10% of that is developed as affordable housing. And so, you know, we need to look at those two things primarily, but there's a third option as well, which is kind of a play off that first one. That's a percentage of the land that's used. And that one's a little bit more specific to like a case by case basis. And so generally we're looking at those first two instead. We do meet the threshold, which is wonderful. But I think the point of the conversation too wasn't, let's just make sure we meet the threshold and call it a day, right? From the planning board presentation, the members who were there from planning board, as well as the members from the Affordable Housing Committee that were there, you can see that their goal isn't, again, just to hit these numbers, right? Their goal is what can we do to continue to provide this very, you know, necessary service to the residents of the city. And so it's those kinds of partnerships with these developers. And, you know, when they come in and build a new unit or build a new development, are they paying into the Affordable Housing Trust? Are they creating units within that development that are considered affordable housing? Some combination of both. And so again, that presentation last night, I really encourage folks to tune into QATV's recording of the meeting to look at that presentation, because it's really, again, incredibly informative to see how much affordable units we actually do have in this city and how much the trust, the Affordable Housing Trust and the planning department does in maintaining those, as well as providing services to people who live in those units. And the difference in pricing for these units versus the market rate, I mean, some of them are astounding, you know? So for the trust to be able to continue to maintain those units, my gosh, I mean, it's definitely necessary and needed, and we need to do what we can to try to promote more of that and try to create more of that stock. And, you know, again, to me, that's my understanding of, you know, Councilor Pamucci bringing this to us and having this discussion in the public hearing and ordinance committee last night was, let's revisit this conversation. You know, are we doing it well? What can we improve upon? How do we change some of the language to make sure that, you know, under the conditions, what is considered affordable, right? And how many units is that going to be required of these developers who come in? And just making sure, again, that we're staying on top of that. So nothing was voted on last night. This was, you know, just to, again, sort of get the ball started with, you know, making sure that this conversation is top of mind for folks. And you could just see a collective of people who, again, are currently working on that. So it's staying in committee for now. There's no changes that are going to be made to the definition of affordable housing right now. But I think because, again, it's in committee and we're having these discussions, hopefully moving forward, if there are any positive changes we can make, you know, once we get feedback from, you know, again, the Affordable Housing Trust, from the planning board, from residents, maybe we can make some positive changes moving forward.
What does the ordinance do, Nina? What does it actually should suggest to change, or does it?
It says here specifically that it says that affordable housing shall be defined as housing that costs at or below 30% of a household's gross income.
Okay.
And as of right now, even without that language, that's the benchmark that we're hitting anyways, you know? And so again, we're on the right track, right? It's just about, let's make sure that we have some language that codifies this process to make sure that we're hitting those kinds of benchmarks. There were some suggestions made yesterday, and one of them I have written right here, which is, I think, an important one. But again, this is why this kind of back and forth conversation is important, is to change it to say below 30% of a household's income eligibility versus gross income, right? Because you are looking at income eligibility versus gross income when you're looking at somebody who needs to apply for affordable housing. So just, you know, adjustments like that, right? Having these kinds of conversations, again, I think will help us to tighten up language to make sure that we are doing right by the folks who need these units.
Okay. Well, yeah. Gross income, you might qualify with your gross income, but after taxes, you might not, right?
Correct. Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So that stays in committee for further discussion.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. National Grid came to the council last night, I understand.
Yes. Also a great presentation. So again, I cannot say it enough. Please tune in to QATV's recording and take a look at this. But Councillor Kane brought National Grid in front of us, which I'm super grateful for, especially after that outage that we just had. You know, I think it was 8-9 hours of an outage over, I mean, it was off. And that's just one of them, right? I mean, that's not even to count the outages that happened, you know, in Wollaston, over in Ward 1, across the whole city. I mean, it's been a pretty tough year for outages with National Grid. And, you know, they said as much when they came in front of us last night. Again, if folks want to reference back to the recording and look at the presentation, you'll see that National Grid, the representatives that came to speak to us, did say, you know, this, within the last 12 months this year, we had 15 reported outages here in the city where they had to come and, you know, there was an issue with a storm or a downed tree or animals, unfortunately, getting into some of the transformer, right? So, I mean, it was just really astounding to see the contrast within these last 12 months compared to the number of outages maybe listed in 2019 or 18, you know, and it's pretty stark. So it was important for us to be able to speak to them and just identify for folks too that National Grid is a private company. You know, they're not a city or government, you know, company entity. You know, we obviously, you know, with constituent services, we try to do the best we can with reporting outages for residents and making sure we're keeping them updated. So we are, you know, sort of a liaison trying to communicate information from residents, you know, to National Grid if there's issues, from National Grid back to residents. And so it's really important that we are up to date as counselors with what's going on so that when we get those phone calls from, you know, our grandma who doesn't have any heat or electricity, right, for hours on end, we can, you know, be informed on what's going on from this private company to be able to relay that information, right? When we get phone calls from people, especially now who, you know, we're all working from home, whose kids are not able to log in to participate in school because there's a power outage, right? We get those phone calls and we want to make sure that we're able to relay the most up-to-date information. And so again, just to, you know, have them come in front of us and say, okay, just give us a breakdown, a detailed breakdown of what the heck has been happening this year. You know, it's just, the number of outages have been significant and more now than ever, we need it to be reliable, right? This is our lifeline using technology to connect with people, people trying to go to their doctor's appointments online, right? People talking to their loved ones, checking in on them, people trying to get their kids to school, right? People working. So again, I'm really appreciative to Councillor Kane, you know, that he brought them to us to just say, okay, here's a summary of what's been going on, why there's been these outages and what's next, right? It's good to know what's going on, yes, but what are you going to do to fix it? And so one of the biggest projects they have going on right now is actually changing the feeders. So you have the transformers and then you have the feeders that go, you know, across different parts of the city. And the feeders are generally the ones that have the problems, right? And so folks are constantly checking the transformers. Generally, they're okay, minus, unfortunately, some animals maybe getting into them. And they're working on trying to create better barriers for that. But it's really the feeders that they're checking as well. And right now, one of the feeders that run all across the city through to North Quincy, they're looking to replace that entire line. And, you know, they did say that there is a website up and running right now for that, for people who want to check it out. It's North Quincy, spelled out, northquincycableproject.com. Mm. And I did check it last night when they were doing the presentation. It's in multiple languages, which I very much appreciate. And, you know, there's contact information on there as well. And so, you know, that's, again, one very major step that they're taking to try to improve services here in the city. But overall, I think it was just, again, a good opportunity for us to ask some specific questions relative to some ward counselors had some concerns in their neighborhood specifically, and then to put it on their radar, right, to say that, you know, these are some constant issues that we've been having, and it's not just a one-off with a storm or a tree or an animal, it's constant, right? I mean, Councillor Harris over in Ward 6 talked extensively about some serious issues happening in his ward that he, you know, brought to the table and made sure that they took note of, and, you know, that's a good opportunity for us to check in with them to say there are some pocket areas that really need some more attention. Council McCarthy over in Ward 1 said the same. It's just, you know, this is an ongoing issue, I think, that will continue to happen because there are some things like those storms, right, that are out of our control. But it was a good opportunity for us to have that one-on-one conversation with them to say, we need to know, again, you know, that there is reliable communication so that when residents are reaching out and they're concerned, we can relay the most up-to-date, accurate information back to residents as well.
So do you kind of feel that the council was heard by National Grid, Nina?
I do. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we have to see what happens moving forward. But as far as the conversation last night goes, I think it was, again, very informative and very helpful.
How did you kind of leave it? Are they coming back again or where did you leave it?
Not as of right now. One of the things that will change is that National Grid does send out some information ahead of time when they're projecting that there is going to be a potential outage to some members of the city, of local government, so that they can be prepared. Obviously, making sure that DPW is on site, ready to go. And so we're now going to be on that list as counselors as well, so we can make sure that, again, we're prepared. And we know that they're anticipating potential, you know, blackouts of service. We'll know that as well, and we'll be on that list so that we can, again, start to communicate with our constituents. So that's another next step that we're looking forward to, but there's no next step that requires them to come back in front of us. That's always, you know, that door is always open though for them if we need them to.
Okay, well, I mean, good for them for showing up at least when they were asked to, I guess, so they should get some credit for that.
Yes, and they came with a very good, again, presentation that I do encourage folks to check out as well.
Great, what else?
So after that, we went into, again, the COVID-19 heroes. And stay tuned, we're gonna continue doing that as well. We have somebody already slated for the next meeting, so I'm very excited for that, so tune in. And then we also had an appropriation request for the sewer drainage rehab fund. So essentially what happens is when developers come into this city, there is a slate of requirements that they need to meet before they can move forward. And, you know, we talked about affordable housing earlier. That's one of them. You know, do they have a certain percentage of their development that they're going to make affordable, or are they going to pay into the Affordable Housing Trust? Another piece of that, and this is something that I believe was enacted back in 1991 or 1992, around that time, developers have to pay a certain amount of their building costs, so the cost that it takes to build out the whole project, they had to pay a certain amount of that into a sewer rehab fund. And then we use that fund to, of course, again, fix our streets, fix the sidewalks, sewers, all of that. And there was an issue that came up over the Townbrook culvert, and it's an emergency repair that we do need to repair. So the funds were already there from developers paying into it. But whenever there's a transfer of funds like that, we need to, as the, you know, the body that approves the funding, we need to approve the transfer of those funds. So we just approved the request to move it from that sewer rehab fund the developers paid into the funds that they can now use to fix these streets and to fix the drainage problems.
Okay, very good. And I actually remember it was former Mayor Jim Sheets who established that sewer enterprise fund. And you were right, 1991.
Oh, it was 1991? Oh, okay, yeah. No, that was, I mean, brilliant man. Just that one thing alone, I think people should look at it and be like, wow, that was honestly a great move on his part, for sure.
Absolutely, yep. Okay, what else?
So next we went into a home rule petition order that came down from the mayor, and that went into ordinance committee. So we're going to be discussing that. I'm super excited about this. If folks have the opportunity to go onto our website and take a look at the agenda for the home rule petition, I encourage them to. They can go to quincyma.gov and then go to the city council agendas and read through this. I think it's very, very interesting. And again, similar to Mayor Sheets getting creative with, you know, this fund that will help to service, you know, this emergency work across the city, you know, Mayor Koch is looking at this opportunity and again, thinking creatively. Essentially what this does is it allows us to bond out what we owe for the pension fund, and we're doing it at lower rates. So you're looking at an amount that we have to pay regardless of what the rates are, right? We have to pay it. And so because the interest rates are so low right now, the home rule petition actually allows us to bond that out and then start making these payments at a much, much lower interest, knock on wood, right? Because we don't know what that is yet, but which could save the city, you know, I can't even throw out a number right now because I don't know what those interest rates look like, but it's a significant savings if this works out the way that we want it to. But in order for that to happen, first, we need to look at the home rule petition. The mayor wanted to tighten up some of that language to make sure that should we move forward, it works in the best interest of the city. Once we tighten up that language, if it goes through, then we can move forward with the actual funding request and take a look at the numbers for that. So we're still really early on in the phase, but it's a very, I think, I think it's a very innovative way to look at what we can do to constantly stay on top of our finances, right? Yes, you owe something back, but let's not just let that sit. Let's look at, you know, how we can get creative about making sure that those payments are lowered as much as possible every step of the way. And this is, you know, a perfect example of that. So I'm very excited to see where this goes. I'm excited that he was innovative enough to bring this out and move forward with something like this. I think it's brilliant. So I'm excited to see how it goes. We're going to be having some meetings and ordinance committee scheduled for future hearings on that. So stay tuned.
Okay. Do you know what the city's obligation is for pensions right now?
You know, I was thinking about making sure that I had the number for you when we got together. I did not have the time to get the number for you just yet, but we will, again, get into that once we get into the ordinance committee meetings as well.
And this, I'm assuming, would eventually need state approval. Is that right?
Correct.
Sure. Okay. All righty. Speaking of ordinances, there was another one to rename a section of Glover Avenue in North Quincy. How did that work out?
Yes. So that one is going, it was objected to. We're going to be discussing it at the next meeting. Whenever there's an objection that happens with any item on the council, it gets tabled until the following meeting. And so there were some questions about, you know, what other streets across the city have been named after other religious figures across this, other figureheads across the city. And some folks wanted to, you know, move forward with this, obviously, and just focus on the renaming of this particular street in this particular area. And then other folks had questions about, again, what other figureheads across other cities have, or not across other cities, across this city have also had streets named after them. And so it was tabled for now. We're going to revisit it at the next council meeting as a regular agenda item as well.
How do you personally feel about it, Nina?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm a Sacred Heart kid, you know, and now Quincy Catholic Academy, I still call it Sacred Heart. And so, you know, my entire elementary school, middle school, you know, Father Harry was, a household name, you know, when I went to school there. So, you know, it's, to me personally, I think it's a great way to honor somebody who was a legend, you know, for somebody like me growing up at Sacred Heart. But I also appreciate, and it was Councilor Pemuji who brought this up. I appreciate his question about, you know, let's, you know, just take this opportunity to also think about, well, who else can we honor as well in this way, who has made such an impact in their community, and in their religious community, right, across the city with all the different beliefs that we do have. And let's make sure that we're doing that across the city and across the board as well. And, you know, I think that comes down to, again, just being mindful of the diversity that we have here in the city. And I think that's a valid point. You know, I think this is an incredible honor, again, for somebody who is and was a household name for me going to that school, you know, and growing up in that neighborhood. But I want to be respectful of the fact that that happens in different areas across the city as well. And we want to be respectful of that. So I think that was also a really good point that was brought up.
Okay. So we'll wait and see. That'll be at the next meeting, you said?
Correct. Yeah, it'll be put on the agenda as a regular agenda item at the next meeting.
Okay. And a couple of resolves I see from Councilor Mahoney.
Yes. And these are updates with respect to specifically financial issues, but it does have to do with COVID-19 as well. So the first one is a request from for Quincy College to provide an update during COVID, you know, sort of what their numbers look like, because we did still have that outstanding. I think it was, I do have the amount here. So I'm going to, if you give me a moment, to tell you what the amount was.
Right. The city had to pay the health insurance costs, I believe, for Quincy College.
Correct. It was $2.4 million of a shortfall. And so, you know, and the thing is about the college, if you follow, and I know you know very intimately this from following this, that it's certainly had its ups and downs, you know, but it also services members of the community, not just here in Quincy, but those who may not financially have the opportunity to get this kind of education. You know, a very, very, very good friend of mine, my closest friend, I could probably say, actually went back and finished school going through Quincy College, you know, and I don't think she otherwise would have had that opportunity had it not been for the services, you know, both financially as well as the guidance that she got from Quincy College. I don't think she would have done that. She's, you know, a full-time working mom of two young kids, and she was able to go back to school and finish, you know, with honors. And she, it was remarkable. And she's one person, right, of many people who I think had the opportunity to go back and get their degree regardless of their life situation because the college exists, right? However, again, with our financial hat on, because that's one of our biggest roles here on the city council, we do need to be mindful as well about what the financial impact and burden is for the city to make sure that we're sustaining that opportunity as well. And $2.4 million is a lot. It's a lot of money that we did not get that we were supposed to get. And so, you know, Councilor Mahoney just taking a look at that and sort of saying, let's grab a snapshot of what happened during COVID as well, and, you know, the impact of COVID to their finances, and what that could mean for us potentially moving into this next budget season. So that's going to, that moved into ordinance so that we can get an update again, just to see what's going on with that. And then that second request that she had, which is also another resolve, also had to do with finances, is just an update on the land purchases for the proposed public safety headquarters. So the financial requests that came in for public safety headquarters happens the same way that a lot of these requests come in, which is that sometimes they don't come in all at once, right? Because, you know, pieces of it could be, well, we need to understand first and foremost how much it's going to cost if we build out the entirety of this public safety headquarters or this project, right? But in order to do that, there's a lot of different pieces, and we need to bring on consultants, we need to bring on folks who know this work well. And so there's, you know, that has a cost added to it. And so there's, you know, different moving parts along the way. And so public safety headquarters still needs to be funded. That's in finance committee right now. But there has been some funding that's already been approved to get the ball rolling on that. And she's looking for an update specifically around the land purchase part of that.
Okay. And was that put into ordinance also?
Yeah. So both of these items are in committee now to be reviewed and then get an update so that we can ask some questions as well.
Okay, very good. That's all that was on the agenda. Anything else that came up?
No, I'm trying to think because it was a very long meeting. But again, I think it's because there was so much. I mean, if you look, there's so much information that was provided at last night's meeting. So nothing else came up that I can think of. No, but I do, again, I just think that the information that was provided is is really interesting stuff. So I hope folks will go and check it out.
Sure. I was curious to get your reaction to the mayor's comments about the proposed Department of Equity and Social Justice, Nina, and the fact that he doesn't see a need for that.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Joe. And, you know, I think I want to preface this by saying that, and I've said this a number of times before, and I think people know, and they probably already seen it, right? But the mayor and I are pretty much like complete opposites when it comes to a lot of our perspectives on things, right? I think if that hasn't been glaringly obvious, you know, I think people know, but maybe people don't see that too much because even though we are on opposite sides of a lot of things, I think we respect each other very much. You know, I certainly respect him very much, right? Again, I think the last five and a half years that we've been able to work together, we have disagreed vehemently on a lot of things, don't get me wrong. But even in those disagreements, we've been able to have really, I think, productive, cordial conversations about those disagreements, right? And ultimately, what we need to do to come together to move forward, right? If we can't work together, then nothing gets done, right? We need each other in order to move forward and move this city forward. And I think both of us have, I don't want to speak on his behalf, but from what I know, just in working with him, I think both of us have the same goal that we want to do what is best in service to this city, right? We want to put our best foot forward to, you know, again, do what we can to provide the best services here, right, for residents. I think when it comes to this, I think it's a very clear example of how some issues are the most important issue, right, for some of us, and they're not for others. And that's okay, you know? If you look across the board, with all of my colleagues and even with the mayor, you know, there are some things that are right in front of us that we want to work on, that we're deeply passionate about. And that could be completely different than somebody else's, right? Right now, for myself and a couple of my colleagues, Councilor Palmucci, Councilor Mahoney, you know, this social justice and equity department is deeply important to us right now. You know, we have heard from residents in this city who have faced it themselves, who have seen their kids go through it, who have moved out of the city. I've had people that I know who have already sold their homes or are currently selling their homes and moving out of the city because of racist incidents, you know? And I don't think this department by any means is going to make crummy people not crummy anymore, right? You can't change human nature. But I do think it's important to have something exist in the city that says we're going to proactively work against that kind of hatred and racism? You know, what are we going to do in this city to combat that, you know, to show residents that racist attacks and slurs and graffiti and all of that, that's not okay. You know, you can't go to a park bench and paint a swastika, right? You can't go and you know, throw and lobby racist things at your neighbors or call the police on them just because of the way they look, right? You can't do those things. And as far as, you know, my reaction and response and my feelings to the comments, you know, I would say those things unfortunately do happen here, you know, just because you maybe don't hear of one or two or a handful of specific incidences doesn't mean that it doesn't happen, right? And I do also want to clarify that two things can exist at once. You know, I've heard from people as well who say, I just don't see there being an issue. I've never experienced it, or I don't know anybody that's experienced it. That's wonderful. I truly, like, there's no sarcasm there. Like, that's great. I am really proud of the fact that that's, you know, that's how you've been able to be here in this city, is that you haven't experienced racism, right? And that's phenomenal. But just because that's your experience doesn't mean that somebody else hasn't experienced racism, right? And I think it was just, it was really, I think for me, a bit of a punch in the gut, because, you know, we came off the heels of hearing about these two robberies of two Asian Americans right here in the city. And the police have done a phenomenal job. I spoke directly to Chief Keenan, and, you know, they are still trying to find the person. And based off of the evidence of what they looked at, you know, the video footage and whatnot, it didn't appear to be a hate crime, because they, you know, looked at somebody and said, okay, this is an opportunity to grab a bag and run. And that's what they did, right? And that's indicative of just, you know, crime of opportunity. Again, that's not to say that it wasn't absolutely a hate crime. You don't know this person's intent, right? But looking at it as it was, it appeared to be a crime of opportunity. But even still, the chief put in additional patrols in that neighborhood to make sure that the residents felt safe, right? And, you know, I got phone calls from family members, you know, who said that they were walking their dog and felt scared because somebody was walking closely behind them and, you know, felt like maybe they were following them, and they just heard about all these robberies and, oh my God, is something going to happen because targeting Asian Americans? And so that's deeply personal. And that's really scary, right? To have your mom or your aunt or your loved one call and say, yeah, I'm scared. Okay. Like, make sure, and they're calling each other saying, make sure you have your phone on you when you go out, and make sure that when you're walking here in this neighborhood, that you're walking with somebody else. I mean, that's not okay, you know, to live in this city, to feel that way. Again, just because though we have that experience doesn't negate somebody who doesn't have that experience, right? And has a great experience. And so, you know, we've had, the mayor and I, a great relationship, I think. And again, I respect him deeply. But I also respectfully disagree with the notion that there isn't a problem here in this city. I firsthand can tell you there is. And even without my own personal experiences, just from things that I've heard from people who are close to me, to strangers who have reached out, you know, that there is racism here in the city. And I think that, again, the creation of this department will allow us to bring this kind of work in front of us and be proactive about making sure that, whether it's, you know, the type of work that we do, the services we provide, that it's done in the most equitable way, right? And that's deeply important to me. So I am still optimistic that we can move forward together to try to get something done. If you really read through the article, it does not say that, you know, creating some sort of position for this is off the table. It doesn't say that. And so I am still optimistic that we can work together. I've always had the pleasure of working well with the mayor, even when we vehemently disagree on things. And I respect him very much. And so while it was a bit of a gut punch, I still, again, you know, really appreciate that we can work together and hope that we still can, particularly with this.
Thank you so much, Nina, for sharing that. Appreciate it.
No, of course. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
Of course. Next meeting?
Yes, is going to be March 15th.
Ah, the Ides of March.
I know. We're not doing back-to-back meetings anymore. So I don't know what you're going to do. But the last 2 weeks, Joe, it's been like, oh, I don't know. Where is he?
I'm sure. Yeah. Joe withdrawal, I'm sure.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit of like your Joe Cat withdrawal too, you know, so.
Well, not to worry. I'm still here and I'll catch up with you on the 16th if that's okay.
Sounds good. I'll see you then.
All right. Thanks again, Nina.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.